50208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome back to Film Fracas. We're here. Hey.
Yay!
Whoa.
That was not nearly as strong as I wanted to
come. I feel like we should have a stronger
one.
Welcome back to Film Fracas, everyone. I'm your host, Carter Spilliards.
Hey.
As you remember from last week's episode, we are coming up on Best Picture for,
for it's been season. A bit.
Yeah.
I was 7 months?
No, not quite seven
not
months.
Really. I mean, what, seven. April? May, June,
it's probably been
July,
seven.
August,
it's,
September.
We stopped
six.
Recording.
Stopped
in
recording
March.
In March, and it is now October.
It's the first day of October.
It is
when yeah. we're recording this. When you're listening to this, this is this sometime is after Friday,
October 4th.
Something. Yeah,
it's been a hot 2 years for me.
Yeah, Phoenix. It's been even longer. Welcome back, Phoenix.
We haven't been so on the air for 2 years.
Hey, well, you know,
we should make sure everyone's aware of who our panel is.
Yeah, I was gonna say, welcome back to Film Fracas. If you're new here. We're all new to you, but if you were listening before. A couple months ago, I'm Robbie DeShazer, at Robbie DeShazer on Twitter. As always, from the beginning with me, Carter Spilliards, at CA Spilliards on Twitter.
Hello, everyone.
Our longest-serving host from not the beginning, Shannon Widener, at Widen Nerdy on Twitter, is here.
Hello, hello.
And welcome back to the fracas, one Mr. Phoenix Zarola.
He's here. Hey.
At Bomb S.
I'm here. I'm back. I'm back for a full season.
This time.
Yeah.
And then guest starring.
I'm glad to be back, by the way.
I'm glad to have you back.
We are glad to have you back.
Oh, yes.
Thanks, not just guys. I'm glad to be here. This was fun, and I missed it. I'll be honest.
Yeah. Well, you hated it the first time.
I missed hating it.
Yeah. Well, since you've left, some things have changed. You've been on a couple of episodes.
I was on the Star Wars episode.
We were on some yeah. Star Wars stuff, and we quite enjoyed having you back for that.
Thanks.
But things have changed since the last time you did a full season. Back in the day, we used to argue a lot about rules, and we used to do a voting system that was very dramatic and taxing and... We kind of all hated it, I'm going to be honest.
We played favorites a bunch, where it was like, oh, I'm going to vote for my movie.
We metagamed
a lot. It was not good.
Yeah, I remember those days.
So now... we
did you leave for a reason?
I mean, I refer to them as the glory days. I don't know if that's generally how it's seen.
But now we have a ranking system, where basically we each have our own independent rankings. And from that... we can compare each other to each other's rankings and kind of make a master list of what we think is the best in this particular category.
Yeah.
That's now, all of our other seasons have been bright and cheery, but this is a very
October.
Special, very special spooky season.
Spooky.
So let's all get into a spooky mood real quick. Everyone just make a little ghost noise.
Ooh.
Let's introduce our 8 movies for this season. Carter, what have we got?
We have, in fact,
8 movies.
8 films. 8 spoopy films decided upon by committee.
All of them are Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase.
Yeah, they're just all Scooby-Doo movies.
Dope.
So, that would be a good idea, actually.
One day.
Jot that down.
Next October.
Yes. Going in, from what I recall, release order, we have Hereditary.
Yes.
Let's see if I knew this in order.
Ari Aster's Hereditary.
Ari Aster's Hereditary. And then Jordan Peele's Get Out.
Get Out.
And then we have...
Let's see if you can do it.
Yes? What's next?
I know the order because I've been posting them on
been
Twitter.
Posting them. Is it Evil? No.
No.
Fright
no.
Night.
Fright Night.
Yeah.
Fright 1985.
Yeah. Yes. Fright Night.
Then
Evil Dead.
Yes, 1981.
1981. Then Exorcist?
Nope.
No.
Halloween.
Then Halloween.
1978.
Then The Exorcist.
Nope.
No. Nope.
We have 2 films in the same year.
So Suspiria.
Suspiria and?
And?
House.
House. Yes.
1977.
And then The Exorcist.
And then The Exorcist.
Okay.
So.
Excellent.
to run through it because we got very
run through it.
Muddled.
Yeah,
there.
We have Hereditary, Get Out,
Fright Night, The Evil Dead,
Halloween,
House,
Suspiria,
The Exorcist.
The Exorcist. So I think a pretty good variety.
Yeah.
Biggest jump is between Get Out and Fright Night. It's a bit of a jump.
We were like, oh, we don't want to do anything too contemporary, and then we skipped the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
Yeah, there. I don't think there were horror movies then, though, so it's okay.
No, they didn't make any.
Yeah.
No, they just made scary movies.
It took a break, yeah. Yes.
They made scary movies.
And scary movie one, yeah. two, three,
And then they
four.
Made epic movie.
Yeah.
And then they made disaster movie.
When's that ranking? When's that season?
They made Vampires Suck.
Those movies?
Yeah, when's that season?
Spartans? Yeah, Meet the Spartans. Vampires Suck.
Date
superhero
movie.
Superhero movie. Date movie.
Yes.
We'll throw in movie 48?
Movie 43. But,
they're similar shapes.
Anywho.
Actually, before we start, Phoenix, you had a hot take last weekend.
About?
Numbers Anything. That are bad.
Oh, yeah. I just really don't like 53. I think it's a bad number.
Can you explain? Is it like...
I think you said it was like an ugly number.
It's an ugly number?
It's ugly...
Visually, orally, like...
I
multisensory?
I think it's just on multiple...
53?
No. See? Didn't even...
Well, because it's a 50, so you can be like 53 or 53.
Yeah, but...
Or 5-3.
53?
Fitty tree. I mean,
you know, they are kind of winning me back to the number.
To the 53. Well, my thing is like
with fitty tree.
I feel like a lot of the good numbers you don't need to like play with for them to be good. You know,
I feel like that makes them more boring.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, some are great in their simplicity, like 4.
Yeah.
No, I don't like 4.
You don't like 4?
4 is too angular. We talked about this.
Oh, sure, you said that, but I mean. It's just like, it's a good, like, even.
But, like, written as a number or, like, as a value?
You can also write it in two different ways.
I like 4 is a good value.
I like 4 as a value.
I don't like looking
at 4 dots. It's even balanced.
But, I mean, like, what?
But I like putting a fifth dot in the middle there.
5's also
same. I'm kind of with you, Robbie. I like the chaos of, like,
yeah. I love the number 5, too, because it's angled and then it's curved.
Got the little, you got the both.
You got both. Anywho, we're getting lost in the weeds.
53 is bad. That's all I'll say.
Getting back to the films.
Sorry, I just thought of that and was like, Phoenix should put that on wax and let
everyone sit with it.
Our category tonight to start off this spooktacular Halloween season, Best Monster. Shane, you want to tell us anything about that?
The category of Best Monster.
Yes, the category of Best Monster. So, what we're kind of thinking about with Best Monster is general criteria of look, performance, a little bit of scariness, maybe how much these monsters add to the film, how innovative the horror is, and maybe some icon status of how important these figures are in our horror landscape, mythos, what have you. So who wants to start?
Things that go bump in the night.
Yeah.
I can begin.
I was going to say, like, I've got a pretty solid ranking here. I'm pretty...
I had more trouble on the back end than I
agree.
The front.
My number one I felt pretty confident in.
I'm going to see if it's all the same. My number one is The Shape, Michael Myers, Halloween.
Absolutely. Absolutely my number one pick here.
Also my number one pick.
Kind of Shannon made a face.
Kind of the quintessential monster.
Well, y'all, I'm back at it again with the hot takes. Halloween was my number 8 pick, actually.
The worst one.
Well, okay. Let me speak.
Shannon's like, the best monster is racism.
I feel like I just had like a stroke. It's fine.
Okay.
Interesting.
Here's my thing with Halloween. So when I was looking through the criteria. Look, the look is iconic. And Michael Myers is an icon in the horror mythology. So I took that into consideration. Mm-hmm. But when I was thinking about performance, overall scariness, and how innovative Michael Myers is, like he is an entity that dresses up, says nothing, and simply exists. What is scary and the best part of Halloween for me is the atmosphere of that film, the music, the cinematography, the performances of the other characters, not so much in relation to Michael Myers. So that was the crux of my argument with putting him last, because I love that movie so much, but and I found I love it so much, but it's not. It is in spite of Michael Myers icon status, which I understand will be rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. So
this, this is like saying Kill Bill has no good fights.
We're all here for bold takes.
This 100% usurps my 53 hot take.
Yeah, this is the
this is what people are going to take away. No one's going to remember that I hate 53.
At me on Twitter, at me on Letterboxd. Like, it's I just, when I'm thinking about all of the other films that I've seen and we've all watched, and the monsters and all of these films, I'm like, you know, maybe, and I think the problem is, maybe it's because Halloween is one of the first. And like, you've had the legacy of all other horror films building off of the monster trope. Like, Michael Myers is, I mean, not as foundational as like German horror or anything like that, but in this modern canon of horror,
I would say he almost is as foundational because of the, like, starting that slasher boom. We were just talking about this before. So we just watched Halloween, at least the three of us did, right before we recorded this. And we talked about the fact that, or at least I think we kind of touched on the fact that there was this slasher boom of the 80s that probably could have happened without Michael Myers, but without
exists because of him.
Without the existence of a character as singular as Michael Myers, without, you don't get Jason, you don't get Freddy, just to name like a couple that aren't like a part of our actual ranking, our competition here.
Where I'm kind of coming from this, and let's set aside kind of icon status. Some of these films haven't been around long enough that you can necessarily even count their icon status.
I was going to say, when we can talk about it. And
so it's like, that can be a consideration, yes.
It's not as heavy, that is true.
It's not as big a weight for me on any of these. Where I kind of come from with Michael Myers is he's very much kind of the embodiment of fear. It's kind of, he is the boogeyman. He is what goes bump in the night. And, I mean, he's, without ever saying a word, I think he's pretty well personified, which I think is a testament to, like, just working through his actions kind of thing. Is he's very clearly just, you know, he cares about something because, you know, he goes to the trouble of digging up his sister's gravestone, and, like, he's very theatrical with what he does. He, like, you know, puts the bodies out and dresses up as the ghost and, you know, goes through this trouble and, like, hides in the shadows and things like that. And it's basically following, just fucking with Laurie Strode for most of the movie, just following her around. Yeah. And so it's like, he very clearly has a purpose behind what he's doing. It's just the fact that we don't even know what that is really kind of adds even more to his terror.
So evil.
Yeah.
He is he's not just the embodiment of fear to me. He's the embodiment of evil. He is just pure chaos.
Oh yeah.
And like, what I thought about, like, disregarding necessarily icon status, but thinking about it, you know, it's, how many years later? 40 years later? 41 years later? Like, to see, without, like, thinking of it as an icon, I still see Michael Myers, and it still is, like, the embodiment of that. It's not, I see Freddy and Jason and, you know, others, you know, some other characters we might talk about now, and I see them as campy caricatures. I see them as what they became over the multitude of sequels and spinoffs and comic books and whatnot. I think regardless of that, even when you get into, you know, Halloween 5 and stuff, and it's not much is changing about it, Michael Myers is still singularly a monster. There's no, you know, they never took the chance to, like, you know, they never warped him into, like, you know, rapping Michael Myers, or like, they never took, you know, they didn't do a leprechaun into Hood with, you know. And that's because I don't think you can, because he is so singularly dark and chaotic and evil. And I think he embodies what a monster really should be.
Yeah. And I think for me, he just has, like, so many things that I think draw from, like, a personal feeling or, like, a deeply relatable feeling, is that even with kind of getting what you were saying about the caricatures thing, is like, he, even despite his fictional aspects of him about, you know, he wears a mask and he's unkillable and all that stuff like that, he feels the most, like, tangible and real, because he's just a guy. He has no powers, really. He's just walking around, he just has a knife,
basically lumbers too.
And he just stalks people. He's very methodical. I just think he's like a monster in everything that is, but it's so subdued, yeah. but you still feel his presence even when he's not shown. You mm-hmm. feel him when he's not around. And I think that goes to your atmosphere thing, but I think that almost like...
But like he's
I think he almost causes part, that atmosphere.
Yeah, a major part of the atmosphere.
I agree with you're saying that like the music and the cinematography.
He's 100% stuff. The manifestation of that atmosphere.
Because he yes. just hangs in the background for a lot of the movie. But he's like yeah. literally in the background yeah. of the film. Adding to your like anxiety.
His like methodology, yeah. his stalkery status that it sets up in the beginning, you kind of... can feel that he's there in some way or somehow kind of mm-hmm. knowing what's going on. And that kind of gives you that kind of yeah. fright because you see them just in the house and you know that he's somehow going around and, plotting,
yeah.
like searching the windows and yeah. and
yeah. Innovation wise as well, there's kind of a trend in horror of the last couple of years of inevitability, if that makes sense, or this idea that like
yeah.
of fate and stuff. And
that I, might come up later.
I was going to say, yeah, there's... We can talk about it with one of our films in this very season.
Yeah.
But, like, mm-hmm. Michael Myers exhibits that, too. And, mm-hmm. they, you know, they ham-fistedly talk about it at the beginning with Jamie Lee. Laurie Strode gets that question about, you know, what is fate? And, like, she talks about the different definitions mm-hmm. of it. And it's talking about, you know. But, like, at that same moment, you see, you know, you're going back and forth between the classroom and Michael Myers at a distance. And... Yeah. That yeah, as he just keeps getting closer and you keep seeing, you know, I love the way that the film takes that too, mm-hmm. where it's, you don't often see until like that final confrontation, Laurie and Michael in the same shot ever.
Yeah.
I think the first time you ever actually see it in a way that's like composed to be so is when he appears in that closet behind her. And that's like been building the whole movie. Yeah. It's that inevitability. It's that,
that's him getting that's progressively closer
to yeah
just another kind of from a different angle talking creature design like I said he's just a regular guy but there's something inherently off-putting about him wearing a mask that is just another face
yeah
that's very upsetting because you look at someone like Jason Voorhees who also wears a mask but it's a hockey mask and so it's like okay sure spooky whatever but
yeah.
you know it's just a regular mask but like Michael Myers is the fact that he's wearing like a human face over his face.
Yeah.
It's just all the more upsetting.
It's so smart because yeah. it keeps us from knowing like his identity or knowing really close to what he is, but yeah. it also still humanizes him yeah. because he still feels like mm-hmm. a person because yeah. his face isn't like he a cartoonish a thing, yeah. Face or
yeah.
and any kind of like trying to be scary.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, he just has a knife. It doesn't have some elaborate weapon. He literally has a kitchen knife that he walks yeah. around with killing people. Yeah.
I also love that he is so inhuman and we even see like, they have an opportunity at the beginning to be like, oh, he was just a scared kid. But like, even as a kid, when you see him at the very beginning, murdering no remorse,
sister,
like
yeah,
no, there's
remorselessly
just
murdering his sister.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think yeah. I love that darkness mm-hmm. about him. I think, yeah. innovative is probably the right word, I think. Yeah. I don't know.
Shannon, do you have anything else to say yeah. before we move on?
I do like the analysis of his costuming mm-hmm. and the rediscussion of contextualizing him in the very beginning of the movie as this remorseless child, adding that dimension to his like to the overall, you know, monster that we're left with. I'm going to stick with it as my number
yeah.
8 pick, though.
Stick with
yeah.
it.
Stick so. With it.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really affect
it's
the overall
not going
ranking.
To affect the overall yeah. ranking. And, you know, there's a part of me that's very happy that Halloween is staying, but yeah. I was looking at my criteria and I'm like,
yeah. Keep it there.
So,
what's your number one?
Two?
Okay,
or
so
your number one, yeah.
Michael Myers, Tired, Evil Dead, Wired. That was my number one pick based on look. The overall design and the makeup of each of these evil dead.
The Deadites.
They aren't called Deadites yet.
The Deadites.
Yeah. I put in terms from Evil Dead 2. I said Deadite / Kandarian Demon, and neither of those terms are used in the movie.
No.
What else? Performance-wise,
gotta get your lore research
in. I was so taken by, I mean, because each of the, two or three, the main deadite that I loved is the one that's in the basement.
Yeah,
very good.
The latch. Yeah. I mean, there's so many opportunities for performance there and to really play up the monstrosity. And then who else? The girlfriend of Ashley, if I'm remembering correctly. The one who has like the laughing, crying, performance, right. And then, you know, comes back into her human form.
I'm trying to remember all their names. Cheryl's in the basement, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Cheryl's in the basement. Cheryl's
that's Ash's sister.
The glorified fifth wheel. And then
Linda?
Wikipedia.
I think it's, is it not Sarah?
They all have very conventional,
very
white female names.
I will look it up. Give me 2 seconds. Keep talking.
Except for Ashley, like.
But it checks off. That is. It's kind of a very like Southern Gothic male kind of name.
So Cheryl is his sister. Yeah, Linda. There's Linda and Shelley. Are the
Shelley? Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember which one is. Yeah, Ash Williams, his girlfriend Linda, Ash's sister Cheryl, his friend Scott, and his girlfriend Shelley.
Okay.
So, yes.
So the Deadites covered look, performance. I was very taken by performance. Scariness. I don't have a lot of ways to quantify or describe, but while watching it, I was gripped and I was like, "Ooh, this is a little repulsive and revolting and also really really cool." And they are like the entire, you know, crux of the atmosphere of that film, I would say more so than Michael Myers, just because, I mean, most of the movie, I mean, with the exception of the first act setup, is devoted to coming into contact with the book, dealing with them. Like they're constantly there. There's not a point at which they really, you know, aren't featured a lot screen time wise, which I mean maybe takes away from the suspense of the film a little bit, so it functions a little bit differently as a horror film. I'm not sure if y'all want to weigh in on that, but
my note that I had there was, I mean, the idea of like an unseen force is pretty common in movies, and like the unseen force or the Kandarian demon as it's like later named in the second movie is there from the beginning. I mean, it's, you know, it's what is breaking the bridge and and knocking at the door and stuff like that. It's pretty common and it's used effectively in this one, but I also love adding the presence of the undead and using that as a conduit for that force as well, for it to be able to talk through them and do the. So this is my number three here on the list.
Okay.
Because Michael Myers we talked about, and my number two we can get to later, but I want to talk about Evil Dead. I love these. It's a great choice. This was a very close one between my number two and my number three, so I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I'm with both of you guys. Evil Dead was my number two. I just think it's like, I just think the presence is so.
Carter's got Carter
the next hot take.
This is the next hot take.
Okay.
It's not my last one.
Okay. I just think they're just so villainous. They really put the evil in Evil Dead. They're terrible.
The sound work is fantastic. My hair stand on end. I'm like, there is nothing right about these noises.
And I love how sneaky they are.
Yes. And I also, to add to your thing, we have other unseen forces that we'll get to later. But I think the great thing about this is when they do take form, it's not just how some other movies will just have like different eyes and like scarring and stuff. They like manifest other body like areas and other kind of gooey, fleshy, not fleshy, bug kind of seemingly like seen things. They're just very interesting and scary and terrifying in both like physical form, the way they sound, the way they act and move around, the way they like psychologically torture you, the way they like physically torture you. They just feel so terrible and like hard to defeat, especially like they're like chopping them and they're still going, they're like locking them up, they're still fighting. They just feel so menacing, so like terrible and haunting, and they're so good. They're like so good.
I will say one thing before you get into this. They do establish one of my favorite things in the Evil Dead series, which is Deadites like flashing back and forth from like being Deadites and being like their human host they used to be.
Yeah.
Which is probably one of the most unique things about that, because it could have easily just been a zombie movie. But I love the like someone will leave screen for a second and then you'll just hear their voice and the camera turns back and it's like, oh, Linda's like okay again. And like you just know it's a trick and you feel that suspense as you know she's about to like. Mm-hmm. Attack him.
I have Evil Dead at number 7.
Ooh.
Ooh, spooky.
And for me, this was, I 100% agree with all of the aesthetic comments thus far. I love the design of the creatures. I love the transformation. I love all of that a great deal. But for me, you don't really get, like, you don't really get that much of an imposing force on them, as it's like, okay, these were demons that were summoned by this evil book, but have really no connection to anyone or anything, and are just here to kind of fuck around.
Once again, why I said we should have done Evil Dead 2. You get
more. Yeah, but it's like you have no context.
I like
for,
Evil Dead 1
for any
more.
Of them doing anything.
It's what we're talking about now. No turning back.
They're just kind of there, and then you have these unsuspecting kids who are just like, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll just have to kill each other now because we're all possessed. And it's like, to me, they don't really carry that much meaning in the film other than, you know, just to serve as the monster.
Yeah.
But, and they don't, I mean, I think they're very cool, but to me personally, and this is definitely more of a subjective thing, but they don't really inspire fear that much. Like I said, I love the design, and they're certainly kind of creepy, but I don't have any kind of, like any kind of reaction of fear towards them. I think they're more comical than anything else, which is definitely played up in the sequels, but
yeah,
we're not
yeah.
talking about those.
I agree with the fact that, like, when it's not played up, when it's played up for more of a comic effect than it is something actually genuinely frightening, we'll get into like another film where I think it also has that same kind of pitfall.
Yeah.
So Evil Dead was your number one. It was your number two.
Yes.
It was my number three. It was your number seven. So what did you have for number two, Carter?
So my number two, let me double check.
Yeah. I was going to say, check your phone before
my number two is House.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
So, to me, this is kind of like, this is what is one of the more, is kind of one of the weirder horror movies, because yes. I feel like this movie is about the monster, not really about the people.
Yes.
And so it's like most horror movies are about the people, and then, you know, the monster is there, and they, you know, have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. But, like, Halloween's about Laurie Strode, but she has to deal with Michael Myers. But House is inherently about the monster. It's the house. It's the cat. It's the whatever.
It's the auntie.
The auntie, you know, however you want to do it. And it's just, she's so wild, and it's just so whack.
House is up there for me. Standout moments, opening your mouth to reveal an eyeball.
An eyeball that yeah. you, know, yes. you close from your eye. And it's like, it's just kind of, it's just a chaotic demon that's just doing whatever it wants because it's, you know,
it's vengeful for beauty.
Vengeful, yeah. And it's, you know, I love the cat. I love the, you know, all the
wait, what
the
was that,
the
Carter?
House, the you, houses change. What?
What was, could you repeat that about
the
cat?
I loved
the
cat.
Oh, interesting.
You know, the eyes, the like glowing green.
Yeah.
Green glowing eyes, like the way the house kind of shifts and changes and starts eating people, you know, the piano that eats her.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of everything the house does is kind of all encompassing of the monster
and
itself.
And every victim kind of becomes a part of the house in yeah. a way, which is cool. House is at my number four, just to start revealing my list. My number two, gotta give it up to the classics. Show me Pazuzu from The Exorcist.
Okay.
Yeah. I love.
Yeah.
Everything about this demon. Holy shit. Ladies, he's single.
No. He stands this demon.
If there's a demon in this season that I stand, it is Pazuzu. Because it's not a real demon. It's made up for this movie, and I'm not actually kind of terrified of it like another one. anyway, talking about, where are my notes for this? I can read. Why am I having a hard time? Where did my notes for this go? Ah, The Exorcist. Yes. The design is fantastic. I love the look of just watching Linda Blair's Reagan just deteriorate. I love watching just from the beginning of it and just watching it get worse and worse and worse and then watch it get a little bit better and then worse again. And then it is very fun, and like, because this is as much a horror movie as it is almost a medical drama, it does feel like a disease, and that's what I really like about it. The other thing I like about it is that the portrayal of Reagan being possessed is kind of a team effort, in a way. And so I like all the thought that went into it. You've got Linda Blair being the actual Reagan, being the girl being possessed, but also her face is superimposed with Eileen Dietz, who is a fantastic, creepy looking woman who does a fantastic job as a body double as well during like the crucifix masturbation scene and stuff that like just wasn't cool to put like a 13-year-old girl doing.
Yeah.
And then, like, you also have the voice done by Mercedes McCambridge, who is just killing it there with that voice, which is so iconic to that character. I mean, so much of it's so fun. I think it's very classic. I think it scared a generation. It, you know, it was horrible and blasphemous enough that it didn't actually get a release in the UK. Like, there's just so many really just fun things around it and going on with it. And just so enduring, and it sticks in your head that ended up at number two that same way that just I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight after watching it today, just a little bit, you know?
Yeah, the Exorcist kind of hit my pack at five. I think it's kind of an iconic monster. I think it's, for something that's not super present for a lot of the movie, because it's like, it's kind of there and then away, and then you don't really get it till the exorcism starts, which isn't until, you know, the last like 30 minutes of the movie. I think it kind of looms large, this you know, impending kind of dread you have the whole movie of like, I know this is coming. And then, I love the design and the physicality of it. Mm-hmm. I think is all great. And you're obviously very connected because you want this little girl to survive. And so you're in it to win it. But yeah, for me, it was like, It certainly is affecting, I think, more so than the Dead. This is where I was kind of drawing the most parallels to, like, the Deadites. As I was like, all right, this is another possessed person by a demon, and I care if this person lives, and, you know, I want this demon to, you know, be expelled from them. And with the Deadites, it's like, all right, sure, these co-eds who fucked around with an evil book, okay, now they're all dead.
Yeah. And that's, I like that, too, that you're like, because I was even watching it, and you know, it's the first time I've seen it in a while. And I'm going, you know, other than, like, she played with a Ouija board, like, what did she do to, like, get possessed? And, like, I think that, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, I want clarity on this. And then I realized, like, the point is not knowing why she gets possessed. The point is knowing that, like, innocence can be tainted so easily. And, also, I mean, like, it's so lasting. I love that at the end you're like, you know, you get the mom says, oh, she doesn't remember anything. And then, like, it's like, does she remember things? Because she, like, gives the clergyman a kiss on the cheek. And you're like, oh, no. Like, what, you know, is she still possessed? Is she, you know, what's going on? And that dread kind of leaves you at the end as well. Overall, probably one of the most effective and affecting monsters on the list.
Yeah, going with the – it's interesting the each had Exorcist and House at number two, because I was having them both kind of close together, but I guess for me more on the bottom half. I had Exorcist 6 and House 7, mostly because I think they had like I think they had strengths in one and weaknesses in the other, and kind of vice versa. Whereas something with like the Exorcist, I really felt the fear and like the terror in the Exorcist. I really like really enjoyed the performance. I think it's maybe the best performance of like arguably in all of these movies, period. Like Linda Blair's performance as Reagan. I also really just liked the deterioration, as you said, and the kind of all the like body language and all of the kind of the voice itself that you're bringing up. I think it's really terrifying. The only thing that I think for me holds it back is there's not much more to it other than just the demon possession. Now, it is the most iconic of it, and it's definitely the one that probably kickstarted it, like the demon possession like run of horror movies. So I kind of gave I'm a little bit fairer to it, but it did kind of hold it back for me, and I think it's a little bit one-dimensional in that sense. And then as for House, I kind of feel like the production design in House is so good. It's like there's so many great things, all the ones you've listed. I love the pool in the end, and I love the design of the cat, and I love all the ways it tortures you and stuff like that. Yeah. But in that one, I hold back on the fear aspect.
Yeah,
and
that's definitely where it's lacking.
And it's funny that you brought up Evil Dead being comical, because I'm like, House is almost absurdly comical in its like scariness.
Well, where it kind of leveled with me was like the focus of the character.
Yes.
Because to me, it's like Evil Dead's not really about, you know, it's called Evil Dead. It's about Ash, you know, having to survive.
Right.
Whereas House is literally, it's about the house.
Right.
And it is definitely more comical, but I think it's honestly a little more terrifying than the Deadites. If you were to just describe to someone this house that will, you know, if you start playing the piano,
I think I'll push back on that. I think a house with a scary piano is not as terrifying as literal dead coming in.
All the different kind of aspects of it, I think, like, if you were to face in real life,
yeah,
I think would be terrifying.
Right.
It's just the way they're played in the movie is definitely comical.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'll weigh in on the house. I'll bolster house being, you know, conceptually terrifying because, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you buy into, like, you know, the whole thing of haunted homes either. But, like, I mean, you know, somebody tells me I'm going to be killed by a house, by like a structure. Not only is that like incredibly innovative, but we've got a entire subgenre of films that exist off of that, from like Monster House to The Haunting of Hill House to like the Amityville Horror, anything like that. So, I mean, like the sentience and demonic possession almost of a structure, I think, is like incredibly frightening. So, I had The Exorcist as 2 on my list. I think possessed children on their own are incredibly frightening. Possessed children are even more so. And Robbie, you definitely you've said a lot of good stuff, so I'm not going to reiterate on your very well-made points. House was my number 3, actually, because of, you know, the innovation of being one of the first homes narrativize that's going to kill you, instead of it, you know, all of that evil being concentrated in a person versus a structure, I thought was, you know, terribly inventive. I'm a big fan of carnivorous grand pianos. Like, what can I say? I think it looks cool. I think it's also effectively frightening. I mean, you know, as a piano player myself, the idea of, you know, teeth coming and chomping up my knuckles is all, you know, makes me kind of want to scream. But, like, you know,
as someone who plays piano, I'm just scared of, like, the lid falling on my fingers and, like, crushing them.
It's very unsettling. Yeah. Deeply, deeply, deeply unsettling. But, I mean, there is also, there's a level of camp that House, like, plays up, whether or not it was intended in the filmmaking process. And I think that that is something that should be respected, I suppose, and added to our list of criteria, even though, like, I'm not going to be analyzing camp and Hereditary or some of
the,
like,
well, you know. I talk about, like in my analysis of Michael Myers, like, I talk about, like, you know, the fact that it doesn't ever, like, reach camp territory, but that's because there's not an intent of camp behind it, whereas with something like House or Fright Night, there is a level of camp that's intended that does have to be kind of taken into some amount of consideration. Mm-hmm. We're also going pretty long, so I'm going to kind of hurry us.
Again, with the rust.
The rust.
This is also going
to
be...
We love to talk.
Yeah. With 8 movies, we are going to go a little bit
always,
long.
It's always the longest for the first episode. Yeah.
So, number 2, I feel like we're, for the most part, pretty settled on the Deadites from Evil Dead. Because
you had it...
I had it at 3.
At 3, you had it at 1.
I had it at 2.
Two. So, yeah.
Yeah, so let's say...
Kind of cancels out my...
Deadites.
Seven. Yeah.
Number 3, I had Pazuzu at number 2. That Shannon had at number 2.
I had number 5.
I had it at 6. 6. Yeah.
So my thought is either that goes at 4 or 3. So depending on where House goes. I have House at 4.
I have House at 2.
I have it at 7.
I have it at 3.
So Pazuzu at 4, House at 3. Is that how the...
I think it's flipped. I think it's actually...
Yeah, Pazuzu at
3 and House at 4. Because y'all both have it at 2.
At 2.
And yeah. No one else has it at 2.
That's fair. Okay. So, with that, our top 4 going down. Number 4, House. Number 3, Pazuzu from The Exorcist. Number 2, The Deadites from The Evil Dead. Number 1, Michael Myers from Halloween. We're going to take a quick ad break. And we'll get right back to you with our bottom 4 and finding out who is going to be leaving this episode. Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 52.8 Media Network called Tapheads. That's right. Tapheads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had. We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads and go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action. Welcome back to Film Fracas.
Welcome back. We're still here.
Yeah, we're still here.
We didn't go away.
Carter went somewhere. Did you go upstairs?
Well, yeah, I got my phone charger.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not, we'll be back next week, too.
We will. We'll have,
I do believe
it. We're promising you at least one more season.
One more season of the show. Hopefully more after that.
Hopefully. I think we'll get on a little roll here.
All right. Let's get going.
Number five. I'll say mine.
I need to my number three.
I also have not done my number three
either. Oh, yeah. What were your number three?
Sorry. My number three is Fright Night.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I adore the vampire from Fright Night.
Jerry Danridge?
Jerry Danridge.
He lost points with me for having the name Jerry Danridge.
I'm sure that's not his original name, but...
It's what he's credited as.
The man is a shagadelic vampire.
Yes,
he is. Playing up the era to its max.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, literally just messing with this next door neighbor. Who, honestly, should have just minded his own business. He's a vampire. He's gonna kill people.
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Just, this little kid's just like ruining. He's like moved into a new place. He's got all, these nice digs. And
yeah.
He's got his manservant.
He's got this, a manservant.
But his silly moral compass just got the better of
him.
But
this little punk who lives next door, stirring up trouble, all he wants to do is, you know, just vampire around, being cool.
Yeah.
Played, you know, amazingly.
Yeah.
Performance, just...
I mean, I'll let you. He's my number seven.
Okay.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
It didn't. And it's one of those things where it was so campy that it just didn't click with me. I think, mm-hmm. And I can see where Fright Night had its time and place as a film in an era that honestly probably was oversaturated with horror and was tired of, because this is probably a precursor to Scream and Scary Movie
a quasi satirical.
Yeah. And so, and like, because it does do the stuff where it's like, oh, you know, the guy who is in the vampire hunter on TV doesn't actually know anything about vampires.
Yeah.
It kind of hits that trope. And it's probably one of the first ones to actually do the, you know, kids who know about horror movies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But also, at the same time, there's some kids who know about horror movies in Halloween. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little there with you. I had number four.
Yeah.
I think he's both... very like charming when he's, you know, trying to mm-hmm. be around people, and then also just very terrifying it is at the third act,
yeah.
full transformation,
oh, yeah.
full vampired out. And
I was gonna say, I love the design of the vampire and how it's like a lot of it's just with the fingers,
yes, and the
like,
giant,
oh my God, the, yeah, nails,
the nails,
like, claws.
And his fingers get long, and then his like full transformation. And yeah, Chris Rand is just like so good,
yeah.
And it's like he's known for really like two movies, and this is one of them. And it's like, oh,
yeah.
Yeah, he really has these kind of like dual personalities, yeah. that I really enjoy about Jerry Danridge, which I'll defend the name because I think it's a great, like, I'm a great not a vampire name.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, I'm just Jerry Danridge down the lane.
Jerry next door.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's probably my least favorite in a sense, because I feel like he serves as less of like a monster and more as like a traditional antagonist. Like, there's just, I don't know, like the camp factor really outweighed the fear factor. Yeah. Here, I didn't want to say fear factor because I'll put in
I'm sure
a Jeff Rogen clip here.
I was good. This definitely like...
I'm Jeff Rogen, fear factor.
This movie to me feels like... apart from maybe literally the movie Halloween, this movie feels the most Halloween-esque, Halloween-y to me.
Yes.
Because I think it has the perfect amount of like Halloween movie camp and cheese, and it's like just very like, okay, sure, yeah. this literally this vampire is walking around a nightclub dancing with people.
It's also really suburban, yeah, like in a suburban house. Yeah, all taken at night. Mm-hmm. I love the, I mean, I don't know if this adds to the monster, but the constant fog around the house. I feel like that.
There's literally just fog everywhere in this movie.
I know that's not a part of him, but I feel like it adds to like his monstrous like like aura that he surrounds himself with. And I think it's
I'm not saying I just like any of the aesthetics of the movie. Like, I think the movie is.
Right, the camp is.
But when I'm talking about monsters, I just don't think he's as effective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually.
And I like. You mentioned like the vampire stuff, like the effects with his face and the nails and stuff.
I love that he physically transforms, which is something you don't normally get a lot with vampires. It's not really just the teeth.
And I think they're good, even though they can look dated at times. Mm-hmm. I have to, like, you know, I can't knock off, you know, that's like. Yeah. That's like knocking off Tron because it was made when it was, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a big, massive part of the persona of that character. And it honestly, like, you know, watching the transformation going on, I'm reminded, you know, of like something like Thriller, which did plenty of scarring of my childhood self. But like it was effective. Now, not so much. I don't know that I would, you know, give it the amount of scariness, but the look, the performance, Chris Sarandon is fantastic. And I mean, you know, I love a good vampire film just in general. He adds so much to that film. Yeah. I had it as my number six, so it was originally much higher, but then kind of looking at some of the other entries on the list, it got brought down. But I do quite like Fright Night, and I love the monster persona of Jerry
Jerry Dandruff.
Phoenix, what was your number three?
My number three was actually Hereditary, which I
awesome.
I am with you that it is
my number four.
Some we have flipped. That's awesome.
Thank God. Okay.
I think I was catching your hint earlier about some real demons that are actually terrifying.
Haman scares the shit out
this
of me.
This is maybe the scariest of the actual monsters out of this whole list for me.
Right. It is very terrifying.
Like, real ancient mythology around a real demon and a cult around it that is very scary to me.
Right. I agree. I agree completely. It actually, just like talking about King Payman just kind of gives me some goosebumps around.
Hail Payman.
Yeah. Hail Payman. But I love the way they show him without showing him because he's like a possessed demon.
You never see like Payman.
Yes.
Except maybe at the very end with the kind of effigy with the severed head.
Right.
But you just see pictures, like pictorial and like illustrations, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah. And you really see.
And then you also see Alex Wolf go, like at one point you're like, that's him.
Yeah. That's him taking form. And you see just like the consequences of him and like the power he has of him, just of humanity. Like it builds with the community he has. It builds with like sort of destiny seeming coincidences with like, what's the little girl's name? That gets, when she gets hit in
Charlie.
Charlie, when she gets killed in the car accident, there's like these kind of
RIP.
Yeah. These kind of like fate deciding aspects of him. You see the like glowing light that I just love so much he's just like, that, like it's just a small like twinkle, but light just scares you when
you surrounds it the room.
When it surrounds the room, when it's in a mirror, it just feels so terrifying. And then you learn about the cult that he has around him. He just has this kind of terrifying feeling.
It's impressive to see, you know, a picture of a grandmother getting showered with like gold coins and knowing like the influence that an outside force has on it, and like see that image and be like, oh, I'm terrified. You know, it's very impressive. Yeah. It's just, it's impressive. I don't know what else to say about it. I'm trying to think of, so you had it at what, your number three?
Yes.
So King Payman is at number three for you.
Hail King Payman.
Number four.
King Payman is my number five.
Okay.
Payman's my number four.
Awesome.
I mean, so Payman's doing some work inhabiting. Fantastic. He's doing some.
Put it at number five then?
Yeah, well, we have a number four already, so.
Yeah.
Hail King. I'm sorry, I was just trying to type. All right. I don't know what happened.
You just, something took over. Why'd your arms shoot up?
So
I looked in my reflection. It was smiling back at me.
Yeah, what was that like?
Yeah. So let's see. Hereditary was
my
number four. The Exorcist was my number five. So do I do my number six?
My number six. I'm gonna drop it in here because we said we hadn't talked about this movie. Helena Marcos from Suspiria.
Yes, Suspiria is mine as well.
Oh, fantastic. Okay,
also
cool.
My number six.
Because I love 90-year-old Italian prostitute women who don't have like real
Suspiria
names.
Is my number five.
Wow.
Oh, number five as well. Bringing it up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, okay, since we're all kind of in agreement here, it's going to fall on
Shannon,
number six.
Where does it fall for you?
Suspiria, it's my number five.
Okay. Excellent. So we all kind of hit around the same spot.
It's going to hit our number six spot. So let's talk about Helena Marcos.
So to me, when I was considering the monster, it was like, I kind of was just the coven.
Yeah.
So you have like Madame Blanc and Helena Marcos obviously is like the monstery part of it. But just kind of how they all kind of work in the background. And you have the, what's his name? The lumbering kind of there.
Oh, I can't.
The assailant
was dubbed
guy?
Yeah.
Jerry Dandridge.
The big guy. That
Jerry Dandridge.
The guy that does all the heavy lifting for him.
Yes.
It's kind of all of them together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just there's so many things about Suspiria that you're like, oh, this is beautiful. But then you're like, this is so immensely unsettling.
Yes. I love the brought back to life. What's her name? I can't think of any of their names right now. At the end, when like she's about to get attacked by her roommate or whatever, who used to be alive and then got cut by barbed wire.
Oh, yeah, the razor wire.
And then mm-hmm. she's like, ah.
Yeah.
Like, that's some great design there.
Yes. Yeah.
For 1977 Italian mm-hmm. low-budget horror.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, just getting into, like, Helena Marcos and Mater Suspirium and Suspiriorum and the Three Mothers and stuff. If there is... The mythology of the Three Mothers in this, you know, very long and kind of bogged down Daria... Argento, like, mythology here. Mm-hmm. There's no better place to jump into the story than Mater Suspiriorum. And that's because even though it's a very dense mythology that he came up with and based it on a lot of like psychology and actual religions and stuff like that, that there's no better place to jump in than that. And I think that
it's also the best of his Three Mothers trilogy.
For sure. But I just think that if you're going to jump into those Three Mothers and like actually get into them, and if you were to only view one, like there's a lot of love and care put into making this character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So also, great sound design. The breathing is so unsettling.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah, this is kind of on the same vein as why I liked King Payman from Hereditary. I just love kind of feeling the cultish power behind the whole thing. And I love kind of the origin or like the kind of direction or reason why that Helena Marcos is there. Like, because, you know, she's the founder of the dance hall and it's like her kind of coven or kind of place of just being like her home basically. And so I just really like the lore of it all. And then of course, like the third act when you kind of see more of herself and more mm-hmm. of the more of her taking charge themselves and not just the assailants kind of doing it for her mm-hmm. and the witches doing it for her. I just love it so much. I think had I been more exposed to her more, I feel like I would have ranked this a lot higher. But I think just knowing that she's there, or the little she's there, while it's really good, I think is why I had it a little bit down, or had it at five. Otherwise, this could have been a lot higher. She's really good.
Yeah, to me, this was like, this definitely hit the middle of my pack, because this is, I think, to me, the most, like, average part of my ranking. Because I was like, all right, there's nothing here that necessarily stands out to me as a, like from a monster perspective, but there's also nothing that I have to knock against it. I think it's a very solid monster. I think it goes well that it's, you know, unseen but heard the whole time, whether it's behind the sheet, you know, the breathing, the, you know, lumbering, and when she finally stabs her and you have just the light outline
is so
it's
very cool. It's a very neat effect.
The lightning outline.
And that whole thing of her like, once again, unseen but always present.
Right.
She also kind of moves through light that kind of follows, you know, Jessica Harper.
Yes. Oh, the actress?
Character's name.
Susie Bannon.
Susie. Just kind of follows her and, you know, in the dreams and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. It's you know, hit very middle of the pack, but it's because, you know, I have good things and I don't have any bad things to say about
it. Yeah, a lot of, just my last thing I'll say about it, a lot of very good build up to that final confrontation when you finally get to hear Helena Marcos like speak, and she's so menacing, and it's like there's no letdown there. Even though you only get to see her for a mere few seconds, you're just like, it's so well done. It's everything that you wanted it to be. Everything you wanted from an ancient witch that's running, you know, German ballet school with her coven. Like, which sounds so weird, but like it does build an expectation that is completely followed through on. So, but like you said, we don't get a ton of her. So very middle of the pack, but she does end up on our overall ranking at number 6. So now I think it's time to talk about our number 7 and our number 8, which means one of these final two films are going home. So one we already talked about a little bit, Fright Night, and the other one is Jordan Peele's classic Get Out.
Uh-huh.
Already a classic, I will say.
Mm-hmm. What do you have?
But maybe not in the monster department.
Yeah.
And this was something I was maybe a little bit worried about when we said we were going to do Best Monster as our ranking for this first episode. And so this is, I'm just going to go ahead and read like what I wrote as my notes, because I think I tried not to just like down on it for like bog down on it for not having a per se, like an iconic monster, you know, in the style of
Michael Myers. Yeah, it's definitely, it's got a lot of horrific value.
Us certainly has more of a monster.
Yeah.
So jokingly, I said the monster is racism. Okay, as funny as that sounds, like the monster is the family and the creepy shit they do, you know, luring unsuspecting young black people to their home to remove their brains so they can live longer, you know, all that creepy. I just love, design wise, I love how aggressively white they are. Like lacrosse sticks and turtlenecks and you know, homes on lakes and
drinking milk out of a straw from her bowls, like Fruit Loops at the end.
Yes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah.
And there is, I mean, truly, I will say, like, even though you see it coming the whole movie, there is just, like, that stab of betrayal when Allison Williams' character, like, pulls the keys out of her bag. And you watch her face, like, go from that fake terrified to, gotcha, bitch. Like, it's, you know, it's so, so good, and there's a creepiness about it the whole movie, but, and there is cool stuff that they can do. They can hypnotize people and send them to the sunken place, which is some creepy shit that I wish we could explore more. But overall, the family as a monster serves more allegorical purposes than it does the same purposes of a monster, is kind of where I get. So, while most of their actions are allegorical, the surface level is just as terrifying as the societal implications, is what I kind of, that's the line I think I probably thought the most about. And I tried not to write something super negative about it, because I wanted to like think of every monster and what the positives were, and then line it up based on the positives, where did I think everything lined up? Because I don't think there is a bad monster in any of these movies, even though we have some weaker ones.
Yeah. I think there's certainly, so I had Evil Dead at 7 and then Get Out at 8.
Yeah. I had Fright Night at 7 and then Get Out at 8.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly one of those things of like, I thought when we were designing this that there was certainly a case to be made that they are in fact monsters, that they're the monsters of this horror movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jordan Peele himself has said Get Out is a horror movie.
Yeah.
And it's,
we wouldn't put it on this list if we didn't think it was a horror movie.
And it's, yeah, I certainly, where it loses me is it's, you know, it's horror to a point kind of thing. And it's like, when you're judging all of these other monsters off a certain criteria, and then this one certainly comes from it from an innovative angle. And this is the most, I think, real monsters.
Yes.
You know, this is, you know, the most real life monster out of any of these. But it's not, you know, a Halloween monster, so to speak. It picks up in the meaningfulness category, and a lot of that. But it kind of loses some in, you know, creature design and you know, stuff like that. Performances, I think all of them are great. I think Allison Williams is great. Catherine Keener, amazing.
Bradley Whitford is fantastic.
So good. He's basically just a little bit more evil Josh Lyman.
Yes. And
Caleb Blinder-Jones is also very good.
Yeah. I think there's such an element to this movie of the little thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's the jokes about, you know, I would have voted for Obama a third time, and there's all, you know.
I think it's a testament to the writing.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, what it won the Oscar for.
Right.
And there's all that stuff, you know, stuff like that where it's like these little things that you, you know, the idea that it does turn a mirror to the to like a white audience and says, hey, some of these things you're doing are like the monsters of this movie.
Yeah.
And this idea that like everyone exhibit, you know, people in real life exhibit the qualities of some of these like quote unquote monsters. Mm-hmm. But what you then lose some when that added realism is points in a competition comparing you to a house that eats people and a guy with a mask who stabs people and actual zombies and stuff.
And this one certainly, I think, has the most kind of like metatextual in its nature, because it's like obviously Jordan Peele is making an ode to other horror movies, you know, some, you know, maybe on this list too. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, there is both an element of wanting to be like a horror movie in its kind of creation. And so you have that added element of it's like, it's both being a commentary on horror in addition to being a commentary of its own message, you know, in a way. And so there are multiple dimensions to it, which make it interesting, but I think also kind of detract from this, you know, from this, this discussion of just the monster.
Yeah. Other than me and Carter, what do you guys think about it? Where does...
I had it at my number eighth pick as well. I want to just make it clear that they are absolutely monsters.
Yeah.
And I don't even mean that in like a psychological or like a allegorical sense or a metaphorical sense. Yeah, no, I mean, they're literally monster people. Like they perform scientific experiments. They perform fantastical manipulation. They torture people. They kill people. They are menacing. Yeah. They're terrible real life monsters. I would also even put, if I were to even like focus it on one, I would put it on Allison Breeze or Allison Williams's character, because
who's Allison Breeze character?
The sequel. Allison Williams's character is sociopathic at times. You see her like the way she is on the phone, she's almost like turns on a dial to being this like menacing one note person,
certainly,
especially at the phone call, and you know her skills in manipulation and stuff like
that.
The
very end when, you know, she's bleeding out on the road, and like she still thinks it's a real cop and not
You know, they're
a TSA agent.
They're absolutely staples of horror monsters, and I am very confident in saying that Get Out is like probably the most close to a modern classic as any movie could ever be. It's this movie is so great. It's going to be remembered for like 50 plus years.
Yeah.
It's without a doubt, as soon as it came out, it's like the best thing. The only reason why I have it so low is because I think when it comes down to it for me, that they're more evil than they are, terrifying, or from like a horror aspect. Mm-hmm. They're just very evil people, and they don't give me the frights. They just get me kind of upset and more like...
It's very easy to get angry at them.
They just kind of like rub you the wrong way. They scare you at times, but you almost just... you're absolutely rooting for Daniel Kaluuya. You really just want to see them just get destroyed like terribly for all the stuff they're doing, which is why the ending when they're all dying is like so satisfying. It's almost like it's more satisfying than seeing like a slasher get killed, like Michael Myers getting shot at the end, because he's evil, but he's more just doing it from kind of like a psychological screwed up way and not from like a terrible evil kind of sociological way. And for that reason, I kind of have it lower, just because it feels less horrific in a Halloween sense. And I also think that just from a realistic sense, because they're human, they don't feel as powerful. They're very easy to kill once he escapes or out of this chair and stuff. They're very manipulative, and they have a lot of powers that or powers and resources with them, but at the end of the day, they are human. They aren't like Michael Myers, who is like a human but unkillable. There are just regular humans that can be killed very easily. So I, for that reason, ranked them so low.
I think you made a really good point with, you know, the terror and the scary, and the scary thing is the situations that Daniel Kaluuya's character finds himself in, and they are the cause of those situations, and they are the key to his escape. If he can best them, if he can kill them, he can leave his situation. But the horror is made from, you know, he's stuck in a chair and might have his brain removed. And
right, you know. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So. Shannon.
Oh,
it clearly wasn't your number eight.
Yeah, no, it was not my number eight. It was my number seven. But I think, you know, listening to all these really insightful comments that y'all have provided about, you know, the narrative and the text and the function of this film and the monsters, particularly of this film, I think, you know, the main problem with putting Get Out amongst the other films that we've selected for this season is just, you know, Get Out is so innovative, and it the purpose of these monsters in Get Out versus, you know, a Michael Myers, a Jerry Dan Ridge, you know, everyone else that we've been talking about is like this, these monsters function to get us upset and do something, which is adding that socio-political context that, that maybe somebody like a Michael Myers is not going to do. It's like two different purposes to the dramatic horror. And, I mean, it's, I like to think of it as, you know, we're not, I mean, yes, Get Out is getting, you know, likely is getting out this week, but it's in a league of its own, and it, you know, that's reflected by the massive success that Jordan Peele's found, the amount of, you know, movie theaters that Get Out packed, and the overwhelmingly positive response of this film.
It'll do really well in season 9 when we take our eight first round losers from the previous eight seasons. And
just, it'll do fantastic. There's so many good things about it.
So. And La La Land will lose first again.
If it does, I will.
Yeah. My last point on Get Out is that I feel like another reason that made me kind of rank it so low is, and it's kind of an interesting feeling because, you know, there's like the whole fight or flight response in like when you were faced in like a scary or intense situation. And this is probably the only film that gives me a fight response. And I think that's inherently why I want it. I make it so low is because while it is like a like terrifying and intense, I don't necessarily want to cower in fear or like, run away. Like
kill them.
I want to confront them and like attack them, and that's something that I think from a situational perspective is not necessarily horrifying, more so upsetting. And
and I think you get into, you know, Jordan Peele's intention there. I don't think he wanted to make an unbeatable force, because I think the overwhelming message of this, the grander message is, you know, racism is scary and evil and awful, but it is beatable. And I think that's, you know, I think that's probably the, you know, the grander, you know, sociopolitical comment that he wanted to make. So I think to make it, you know, something so horrifying and so inevitable that you can't escape it, that your, you know, your main character just ends up being another victim, you know, isn't what you're going for with that. So, just to give everybody the math where everything falls, that means our number 7 is Fright Night and our number 8 is Get Out. So going from 1 to 8, our ranking of monsters is number 1, Michael Myers from Halloween. Number 2, The Deadites from The Evil Dead. Number 3, Pazuzu from The Exorcist. Number 4, Houseu. Number 5, King Paimon from Hereditary. Number 6, Helena Marcos from Suspiria. 7, Fright Night. 7, Jerry Danridge from Fright Night. Number 8, The Family from Get Out. Well.
So, woo, we did it.
What happens to our voted off movie this season?
I guess they get eaten by like a haunted piano.
Okay, yeah.
So they fall down a well and then their head pops up later.
Get Out gets eaten by a haunted piano this week, unfortunately.
Yeah, sorry, Get Out.
But let's,
you have an Oscar, though.
Yeah, true. Which is, you know, only one other one has one, I think, on this list.
Yeah, I think so.
Exorcist is the only other one.
It didn't win an Oscar, did it?
Yeah, it won Best Picture, but it won some Oscars.
Best Adapted Screenplay.
Okay.
And Best Sound, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, Linda Blair did not win.
No, she didn't win, and it didn't win Best Picture either.
But she won, what did she win for it? She won something that was also important.
I don't know.
Some important Oscars.
Maybe a SAG. Anywho.
Yeah, let's
wrap up and get out.
Yeah, do your promos, do your stuff like that.
Recommendations. You can find me on Twitter at CA Spillers, like spill something you aren't an NNS. I tweet sometimes, but not often. Doesn't matter.
don't tell them that. Just promote.
follow me. I don't follow do me. Anything
I
on
don't
Twitter.
Don't do anything. No, please do. Follow the show also, you know, at Film Fracas, and also 52.8 Media and Tap It.
Yeah.
I'm sure
much stuff.
So much stuff now. I'm recommending one of my very favorite movies this year. I was thinking about it, and I was like, oh, what should I recommend? And I was like, oh, wait, we haven't done this since March, so anything post-March.
I'm also going to say, I'm just going to wipe the slate because I don't know where Brett's spreadsheet was, so.
I mean, we should probably still try not to do any repeats, but.
Try your best, but I'm also not going to, like, yell at anybody.
I'm recommending this week Lulu Wang's The Farewell.
Very good.
It is my second favorite movie of the year thus far. It is a very, very impactful and dramatic film. I love it to pieces. It makes you want to hug your grandmother. It's just a movie about family and like how we treat our family and how we love our family and how people love their families in different ways. But we're all kind of the same. So it made me cry more than once. I highly recommend, if you have not seen it, go watch The Farewell.
All right. Yes. I am at Bomb S Phoenix on Twitter. This feels, I just got like a real sense of throwback from just saying that. And yeah, just from the first two seasons. You can find me there. Please follow me. I try to tweet things that you'll appreciate and enjoy, especially if you're a fan of this podcast. Thanks, Carter. I appreciate that. I don't remember any of my recommendations, and I don't remember when the last two seasons were, so I could be repeating myself. But if you know me from those last two seasons, you know that I almost always seem to recommend TV shows, even though it's a film podcast. But I'm going to do another one, and I could have repeated it because I don't know when the season came out, but I'm going to recommend Succession on HBO.
I don't think you're repeating it.
I think we had season one recommended when it came out.
All right.
So you'd recommend season two?
Maybe. I don't remember if I recommended season one, but either way.
I recommended season one.
Okay. Then, yeah, I'm recommending season two because it's just the best. It is.
It's so good.
I think right now it is the best show on television. Yeah. I think assuming that. This is an asterisk, assuming that there's not going to be any more Fleabag seasons like Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Tens, or as at the moment. So if that's the case, I feel like it is going to be the next best show of the year or of the coming years because this season is amazing and it just seems like I don't want it to end. It's already two episodes left and I'm scared and I don't want it to end, but it's so good. You really have to check it out.
For me, the first season went from like started at an 8 and then ended at a 10, and then this season started at 10
and it's gone to like 13.
Gone to like 13. There's no dip in quality. It just keeps getting better. Oh my god.
It's incredible.
Fine, I'll watch it.
Thank you for taking my Film Fracas recommendation.
All right,
Rob. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Robbie DeShazer. You can also follow my other show, Tapheads, at Tapheads Show.
We drink beer.
We drink beer. Carter and I drink beer with our friend Wendy.
Shout out to Wendy.
Yeah. I don't know if it's been I'm sure it's been recommended on the podcast, but I was thinking about stuff I've been watching other than the movies for this and what I've been watching. Oh, actually, I'll recommend something different. Go catch up on Veronica Mars if you haven't watched Veronica Mars. I spent most of the summer watching that.
Still have not seen it.
It's a fun time. If you like Kristen Bell, you're going to love it. It's a lot of her.
But who doesn't like Kristen Bell?
I don't know who doesn't like Kristen Bell, but also just the whole cast is great. Ken Marino is a recurring character who does a fantastic job.
He's great in everything.
Yes. The new season is hit or miss. I'll be honest with you. Seasons 1 through 3 are fantastic. The movie, I loved it. I know not a lot of people love it, but it fits very much in theme. And the new season is available now, so on Hulu. All of it's available on Hulu, except the movie, which is on HBO for the moment.
I guess. I don't know. I like that you look at me as the HBO expert, but...
Phoenix, you're the HBO expert.
I don't know HBO's movie catalog currently, yeah. But it, you know, you're more than welcome to check it out.
It is Warner Brothers, so it's probably on HBO.
That's fair.
Yeah.
All right, guys, I guess I'm wrapping this one up.
Do it.
So do it. You can find me on letterboxd.com at zedsdead5. I like to post some quips and some dumb thoughts about the movies I'm watching, and it's good fun. What else? You can also check out 90films.co, which is my film blog project where I am trying to watch every single Best Picture winner and write about it. I started this halfway through my movie watching journey, so I've already seen like 45 of the Best Picture winners. But check it out. Let me know what you think. And what else? My recommendation for this week was one of my favorite films of October, which is the documentary feature Maiden, which is about the first all-female crew to compete in the Whitbread Around the World Sailing competition. It's good. Fantastic. You should check it out. I believe it's on video on demand right now. Might get picked up by a streaming service. And also, PSA, actually listen to the TV show recommendations. You might find your next favorite thing. Robbie recommended Killing Eve, like one of the last few episodes we did.
Phoenix wasn't here.
And like
that's true.
Now all I think about, all I tweet about, everything is Killing Eve. So yes, recommendations are good.
It's a good show.
It's fantastic. Yes. And that's going to do it for this episode of Film Fracas. We're back, baby.
Let's go.
We're going to be back. These are now coming out on Friday, so we'll be back next Friday with another episode with only 7 movies remaining.
To guide you gently into the weekend.
Yeah. So thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure to follow the show on Twitter at Film Fracas. Make sure to follow 5208 Media at 5208 Media. Follow all of us, like I said.
Tap heads.
Yeah. There's all these things to follow. There's a lot coming down the pipeline soon. We're really excited about it. But until next time.
Boo. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thanks to Carter Spilliards, Phoenix Arola, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever it is you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. Media.